Recorded live, coast to coast, from across North America, the Mutual Broadcasting System presents Richie and John, the podcast that connects you with the people, events, headlines, and lifestyle interests of the global LGBTQ+ community. Here are your hosts, Richie Roy and John McMullen.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Richie and John. We are back, as you know, and we are better than ever, maybe as good as ever, probably, maybe worse, who knows. But in any case, we are here and we are bringing you the latest that you need to know about the LGBTQ community and the things that affect us. And there are many things that affect us these days.
Oh, my.
It's a lot. I mean, we only really have time to scratch the surface. And by the time we put these stories together, there are like 10 more that we could cover, you know, but we only have so much time, so we will do our best. But I am here, of course, with our wonderful co-host, John McMullen. John, how are things in the Coachella Valley?
Oh, they're beautiful, especially now because the weather is changing. And so we're having like nice, cool temperatures in the 60s and 70s. And barely touching the 80s. So it's really getting to be a very comfortable time of year again. By the way, coming up later in our program today, we're going to be joined by somebody who's very involved with the whole No Kings Day movement. It's somebody who is one of the local founders here in the Coachella Valley of a group of Indivisible, which is, of course, the parent organization, I guess you could say, that is involved in putting together these No Kings rallies that are happening on this day, Saturday, all across the United States, like 2,100 locations. It's going to be huge. And we want to encourage you to get out and take part in your community, or maybe you did. And if you did, we want you to send us your take on how it went, and we can talk about that on an upcoming episode. So Joy Silver will be here later on in the broadcast to talk with us.
Yeah, no, that'll be great. And, you know, the No Kings Day events are great. You know, they tend to be very well attended. They show, I think, the world that we aren't all in love with what's going on right now at all. And that
more of us than not are really unified in trying to make the world a better place.
Exactly. No, I mean, that, right. And it is good to see, because, as you know, social media tends to show these events, these No Kings Day rallies and marches and stuff like that, because, you know, one of the real issues, thankfully, we are not allied with the New York Times, the Washington Post, CBS, ABC, you name it, they are not paying our bills. And that's kind of good, because right now they are not doing the work. They're not covering this stuff. And really, you get this idea that maybe like people generally like what's happening, but that's not the case.
Yeah.
And so it's important.
By the way, since you bring up the media, I'll just make a quick point that this past Wednesday, it was an amazing day out in the Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C., when a lot of reporters handed in their credentials and said F you to the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, and told him, fine, if we have to cover the Pentagon only as you say we can, then screw you, we're not going to cover you at all, which plays right into what I think has needed to happen for a long time, which is that the mainstream media should just, since the TV is Donald Trump's oxygen, just quit giving him the coverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but they, you know, it's like catnip, you know, he just gives them the crazy thing to pay attention to, you know, whether it's, you know, replacing the Rose Garden with a Panera for lickspittles to, you know, declaring war on Venezuelan fishermen out in boats to whatever it may be, you know, he gives them what they want, which is something to talk about. But yeah, no, I agree. I think that starving him of that attention would be exactly the right move.
Well, you know what? I think we should go 123 miles down the freeway to the west of me right now and talk about something that happened this past week at the Abbey in West Hollywood.
Yes. So in West Hollywood, which for those of you who don't know, is Hollywood, but for gays. But the Abbey is kind of this, you know, institution. It's this big bar and kind of like venue. And they had an event there that was a showcase of celebrity and community pride. This was last week. And it was a countdown party for the first ever National Prep Day, which telehealth company Mister is putting together to promote HIV prevention. I will just sort of have a brief aside here that Mister is excellent. I use Mister for my PrEP and DoxyPEP. It's very easy. It's very discreet. And, you know, I think depending on your insurance and other things, many times it's free. You do your labs at home. It's great. And PrEP is super important. And as is DoxyPEP. So I'm glad that they're kind of making the case that PrEP is something that we should be thinking about. But this event was hosted by Bob the Drag Queen and had a dazzling, actually quite dazzling guest list. They had Cardi B, Dua Lipa, Matt Bomer, Kim Petras, Demi Lovato. Diplo was spinning music while drag performers brought some Dua Lipa hits to life. And then the pop star herself surprised the crowd, joining on stage for New Rules and Don't Start Now. Mr. Founder Tristan Shoecraft called the night a glitter, drag, and healthcare all-in-one room. The company marked the day with events in 15 cities and plans to open new storefronts offering twice-yearly PrEP injections in LGBTQ plus hubs from West Hollywood to New York. That's cool, too, actually. Yep. The injections is a really big new development that I think will be important for a lot of people.
And, of course, they have a sister organization as well called Sister.
You know, I was actually recently in New York City and in Hell's Kitchen, and I walked by a storefront, and I was like, oh, it's the Mister. Mister has a store. I didn't know they even had a storefront. And when I got my box like a week ago with my, like, you know, my Discovy in it, I looked at the address. I was like, ooh, it comes from there. So I think it's very cool that they're kind of, you know, expanding in a moment where, you know, things are, everything is up in the air.
It's not common for us to see brick and mortar places doing stuff that is really a big mail order business. So it's kind of nice to see that presence in our communities across the country.
Yeah. And I think the thing to keep an eye on with things like PrEP is, and we'll talk about this knucklehead RFK Jr. a little later, but keeping an eye on how they might try to tamper with things like PrEP, because I saw a story that RFK Jr. is asking or directing the FDA to re-look at the safety and efficacy of mifepristone, you know, the abortion pill. That's, you know, a way to essentially ban abortion without saying we're banning abortion. Is you get a bunch of people who are not scientists, who are political ideologues, who are in charge of the FDA to, you know, cook up some science and determine that a drug that is clearly safe and effective and has been in use for years is no longer considered safe and effective and is taken off the market. The abortion pill next, maybe PrEP. I mean, you know, we have to keep an eye on this stuff. But for now, PrEP is not only legal, but the Supreme Court upheld that it, you know, that the Affordable Care Act provisions that require it to be covered under insurance stand. So get your PrEP, do it however you want to. I mean, not all PrEP comes
with an Affordable Care Act.
There's that too. But yeah, not, you know, PrEP doesn't always come with an appearance by Cardi B, but it does come with the assurance that you are going to be safe. But yeah, so that's a fun one. And then we're going to go next to one of our least favorite states, the Lone Star State. And
that's where we have a pastor who is drawing condemnation for promoting violence against liberals and spreading false anti-LGBTQ plus claims. In a recent online broadcast, Christian nationalist preacher Joel Webben told his followers, quote, "If you fire into a crowd of liberals, you've got about a 100% chance of hitting exclusively child predators," end quote. And I was like, no, I think he means to say if you were to shoot into a crowd of MAGA supporters? Because they're the ones I keep hearing about having an issue with either being on some Jeffrey Epstein list or getting nailed for raping some kid or taking and sexually abusing some teenager. I don't hear this a lot about liberals, lefties, Democrats, LGBT people. Like, give me a break. The remark echoed rhetoric from far-right circles linking LGBTQ plus people and their allies to child abuse, a claim repeatedly debunked by experts who, you know, but one that watchdog groups have warned fuels real-world violence. Webben, who has previously called for the death penalty as a deterrent for homosexuality, also repeated a baseless claim that 17% of gay men, are you ready? Please, have your barf bags ready. Eat feces. Now, Richie, I know that you're a pretty whack guy and you're into some really wild stuff, but do you eat feces? I know I don't.
No, I mean, I really, it's not on my sort of regular, you know, sure.
Well, Mr. Webben, who has previously called for the death penalty as the deterrent for homosexuality, he has critics who note that while he targets queer communities, he ignores widespread sexual abuse scandals within churches and the Republican Party. Duh. Including the President of the United States. Civil rights groups say that his escalating rhetoric represents a growing threat from extremist religious movements blending faith, hate, and political violence. Those damn Christian nationalists.
Yeah, and they're, I mean, it is a real thing. I mean, you know, we've talked about these kind of stories percolate up from time to time. I mean, and since we've been doing this, and for time immemorial, there's always a wackadoo, you know, Christian evangelical pastor saying nutty things about gay people. The difference now is that, like, those people have the ear of the federal government and those in power, you know? And that's the difference. And it's not a nice feeling, because what you see happening is just that really a year, 2 years ago, was essentially fringe thinking that was relegated to the dustbin of history is being dusted off and kind of re-bandied about as maybe policy, you know? So anyway, screw this guy. I mean, yeah. Whatever. Joel Webben, you know.
I'd like to whatever. Take a shit on his face, though.
But yeah, but going back to our friend RFK Jr., he is, I mean, first of all, I can't with him. I mean, they're just this, I think it was just this week during the shutdown, they fired a bunch more people from the CDC to the extent there was anyone left there, you know, and this is the wildest one. This really feels like early 20th century. This sounds like Kellogg level, like, you know, sanitarium stuff. So RFK Jr. drew sharp criticism after claiming, get this, that circumcision may double a child's risk of autism. Speaking at a cabinet meeting last week, Kennedy said, children who are circumcised early have double the rate of autism, and it's highly likely because they're given Tylenol. The remark echoes previous widely debunked claims from the administration linking Tylenol use to autism. While a 2015 medical journal study noted a statistical correlation between circumcision and autism, experts emphasized it found no causal link and made no mention of Tylenol. Public health officials and autism advocates say Kennedy's comments risk spreading misinformation and stigmatizing autistic people. No credible research supports any connection among circumcision, Tylenol, or autism. Advocates stress that autism is a neurodevelopmental variation, not a disease, and that support and inclusion, not baseless blame, should guide public health policy. This is just wildness. Okay, like, you know, I guess now circumcision like changes chromosomes. I don't know what he's. It's just random crazy things. Like it's like
acting like I've got neurodivergent issues and like I'm some autistic person since I am cut.
It is just unbelievable to me. They're just saying things now. And I think, honestly, I don't know if it's by design or not. The overall effect is to just make everything so, make facts so irrelevant that you just get lost in the miasma of garbage. And you don't know up from down anymore, which is kind of what they want. Mm-hmm. And this story just again is it reiterates the fact that RFK Jr. is an absolute disaster for public health, for really any kind of wellness for anyone. And the idea, all of his ideas are wrong. It's like he's 100% crazy. You know, it's like. He thinks that, you know, raw milk is going to solve cancer or, you know, or whatever the latest thing is, you know, I'm sure that he'll say, you know, that sauerkraut, you know, will help you with your lupus or just some dumb shit that like some magnetic poetry of words coming out of his mouth that is supposed to like guide health policy is just so demoralizing.
What is wrong with the way he talks?
Well, I mean,
some cow kick him in the head. I'm sorry. I forgot that he had worms that ate his brain.
Well, he had worms that ate his brain. I mean, he also looks like a leather coin purse that was left out in the sun for 10 years. You know, just the idea that he is supposed to. But the crazy thing is that if you look
on vacation into, here in Palm Springs for a little too long,
if you look at the kind of the fever swamps of the right, they actually like show pictures of him shirtless and are like, this is a real man. It's like. We have some good news from Oklahoma.
Yeah, one of our favorite middle of the country wackos is on.
Yes, so teachers across Oklahoma are celebrating the resignation of Ryan Walters, the state's embattled education superintendent, known for his
He was the one who was jacking off in his office or. At school board meetings or you know, whatever, getting his jollies and getting caught.
Right. Or was it he had like porn playing or something?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Walter stepped down in late September to lead a right-wing group called the Teacher Freedom Alliance.
Which, by the way, that group is tied to that other nut job, Charlie Kirk's organization.
I'm sure. Yeah, right. Of course. Educators describe his departure as a moment of pure joy with spontaneous celebrations, even a farewell party planned at the state capitol. Governor Kevin Stitt has appointed retired superintendent Lindell Fields to replace him. The state education department quickly reversed Walters' initiatives, restoring the Teacher Hall of Fame and removing religious and political content from its website. Meanwhile, Oklahoma's attorney general has ordered an investigation into Walters' handling of taxpayer funds, citing a, quote, history of mismanagement. During his tenure, Walters attacked teachers' unions, pushed to ban LGBTQ+ books, and attempted to insert Christian nationalist content into public school curricula. I'm trying to remember, was he the one that tried to push through an order for Trump Bibles? For the schools, I think he might.
You know, he was the one who was friends with
Chaya Raichik. Yeah, brought her in. Correct. Yeah.
Well, and if we haven't heard his name enough, of course, Ken Paxton is back in the news. You know him. He's the attorney general in the Lone Star State. He's facing a backlash after announcing what he calls undercover investigations into so-called leftist terror cells. A phrase that he uses to describe groups supporting Antifa and transgender rights. Anyway, in a Tuesday press release, Paxton claimed corrupted ideologies like transgenderism and Antifa are a cancer on our culture. And he says that the probes are a response to the killing of right-wing activist Charlie Kirk, whom he called a martyr. Yeah, I have a name for him too, but it's probably not suitable to be on at least broadcast television. Critics say that Paxton's rhetoric mischaracterizes transgender people and fuels hate. Law enforcement officials have found no evidence linking Kirk's suspected killer to any political or LGBTQ plus group, and civil rights advocates warn that Paxton's statements echo a broader right-wing push to portray transgender Americans as violent extremists, a claim refuted by crime data showing that trans people are far more likely to be victims of violence and not perpetrators, as our many-time guest, Laura Meeks, could attest, since she used to fly, you know, B-2 bombers with nuclear warheads and didn't drop them on any Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, this melted candle of a human is just, you know, we've talked about him so much.
Yeah. And I mean, even his own party tried to get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, he is, you know, this outlive, outlast, outplay cockroach of a human who is, and who just, you know, uses the power of the AG's office to really just do terrible stuff. You know, has tried to insinuate, you know, himself into other states' business, you know, through things like subpoenas and trying to get information from others, from medical providers in other states who provided telemedicine to people in Texas for things like transgender care or abortion. And, you know, the stuff, I mean, first of all, transgenderism, I mean, come on. But like, you know, transgenderism and Antifa, I love this like new Antifa is back, you know. Pam Bondi the other day talked about taking Antifa down, you know, from stem to stern or top to bottom or whatever, you know, as if it, you know, there's an org chart for Antifa, yeah. You know, that they have, you know, a 501c3, you know, it's just dumb. But I think part of it is that they just expect that the people who they're talking to, which is their boss and sycophants, are so know nothing about everything that they will just kind of buy it hook, line, and sinker. You know, they're going after Antifa Inc. This is, it's just, the stupidity is just breathtaking every day. It is just breathtaking. And Paxton is no different. Speaking of being anti-trans,
and being anti-intelligent,
President Donald Trump is facing renewed criticism after making, again, false and inflammatory comments about transgender people during a White House meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, whose child Sasha is non-binary. During the televised meeting, Trump declared, quote, "We have no men in women's sports. We're not going to take your child away and change the sex of your child." Carney remained silent as Trump continued attacking what he called woke crap. The meeting was focus on trade tensions and Trump's threats to impose steep tariffs on Canadian imports. Instead, critics noted that it became a platform for random anti-trans rhetoric. Advocates note that no U.S. law or policy allows the government to, quote, take children for gender-affirming care, which, again, yeah, if anyone's taking anyone away, it's ISIS taking away innocent people and throwing them to the wolves. No one is, like, literally no one is just, like, whisking a child out of school and changing their sex. It's just, I mean, this is the, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats level dumb. But Trump's framing, of course, deliberately also misgenders trans women athletes. GLAAD's Sarah Kate Ellis says Trump's remarks distract from real issues, which is his favorite thing to do, is distract from real issues, adding, quote, "We all want belonging, peace, and the ability to care for our families." I mean, these are true statements. I will say my thought on that is there is a disconnect. I know it's just positioning, and I know that it's not GLAAD's place to be an angry organization, but to go from, like, an unhinged, you know, president saying things that are so wildly wrong and misgendering people and just literally free forming on the world stage, to responding to that with we all want belonging, peace, and the ability to care for our families. I mean, I would be fine with a fuck you from GLAAD, actually.
Me too.
So, you know, a good, I mean, we, yeah, belonging, peace, and care for our family, sure. But like that doesn't, that it does not feel commensurate to the spewing bullshit coming out of this administration.
Yeah. The president of the United States of America.
Right.
You know, representing you and me.
Right. And, you know, to the point of it being a conversation with, you know, with a Canadian prime minister, it also is something that came across my transom is as of this week, there's going to be major confusion at the border for people with passports that are not male or female, people with passports that are X or U. Who are non-binary or trans or otherwise have valid passports that are not male or female, because they have, again, for ideological reasons, instructed that the database that airlines and everyone uses to put in passengers on manifests can no longer enter in a U or X. They can only enter in an M or an F. And if they try to put anything else in, it'll kick it back. And so there's,
in Trump's case, they should make him enter an and an F, because that's what he is an MF-er.
But, you know, again, it's just these little things they're doing, you know, these that fly under the radar, but, you know, taken in sum is just a full court press, constant, relentless attempt to erase trans people and make their lives miserable. And that's just one population of many that they're trying to do that to. But we have
good news.
So tell us about a place where maybe our trans brothers and sisters and folks who don't identify as either brothers or sisters might have a little bit of sanctuary.
Well, the others and nisters are going to have sanctuary, at least if he is elected a mayor of New York City. If Zohran Mamdani is elected, he is honoring transgender activist Sylvia Rivera. You'll remember her. We talked about when she passed away, while pledging to make the city a sanctuary for trans people. In a new campaign ad, Mamdani calls Rivera a trailblazer who fought for those even her own community excluded. He recounts Rivera's activism alongside Marsha P. Johnson during the Stonewall era and her work founding Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, or STAR, which housed and fed trans youth. Mamdani says her legacy inspires his promise to deploy hundreds of lawyers to resist President Trump's anti-trans policies and to establish an office of LGBTQIA plus affairs. The candidate vows to expand housing and gender-affirming care programs, declaring New York will not sit idly by while trans people are attacked. Mamdani says honoring Rivera means building a city, quote, where trans New Yorkers are cherished, end quote, and where, in his words, quote, in a time of darkness, New York must be the light, end quote. That's very refreshing to hear out of somebody who is running for office these days. Although I have to say, I've been very pleased by some of the things I've seen coming out of the Buttigieg camp, because Pete has been very actively giving a dose back to those in the LGBTQ community who are LGB without the T. And it's refreshing to hear one of our good guys doing that.
I mean, that's great. And, you know, and it's so important because it, you know, in this moment, obviously the administration is not our friend. But we had moments not that long ago, like the podcast that Gavin Newsom did, where he essentially...
That's why I think that he's done this, because he knows that this will be one thing that will set him apart from Gavin in a run for the 2028 presidential bid.
Yep. We're just seeing also, you know, this slow, weird creep being the operative word towards people wrapping their heads around transphobia, people who previously didn't. You know, a few months ago, I saw this story that Malcolm Gladwell basically was like, yeah, you know, I used to kind of be pro like trans people, but you know, actually I'm not, never was. First of all, I'm like, who cares? Your books are hack garbage. But like, you know, we're seeing that, you know, people kind of, and with the thing with Gavin Newsom, you know, in an attempt to, I guess, try to seem like a maverick or something, you know, being like, well, it's actually kind of complicated and like maybe a problem, you know? So having people who are just full-throatedly, you know, whether it's Zoran or Pete Buttigieg, just saying like, no, this is not up for debate at all.
Yeah. People are people.
Yeah. So
give them the respect they deserve.
It's great. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, I think that this is a, it's an interesting situation, you know, with Zoran, because I know people on both sides of the situation, all of whom are Democrats, by the way. Mm-hmm. Let's take Republicans out of the equation for New York City. Within the Democrats, I know a lot of people who are very excited about Zoran Mamdani, passionately, and then there are some who are really not. And it surprises me, actually.
Came to a stop in my tracks having a phone conversation several weeks back with the former speaker of the New York City Council and representative from the Lower West Side, Corey Johnson, who it was clear to me from our brief conversation that he was not a Mamdani supporter. And I thought that was really weird considering how pro-LGBTQIA+ Corey is.
Yeah. It's been very mysterious to me. There are just some people, and they tend to be Democratic machine people, who, and it actually is giving me major echoes to AOC when she first came on the scene, because she upset a huge, you know, her seat was really meant to be for a long time Democratic machine politician. And it was an upset, and she unseated him, and the machine was pissed about it. And I get the sense that's kind of what this is about.
They should have learned from that. They should have learned from Hillary Clinton, in 2016. I'm really surprised the Democrats always try to scrub away the reality of America's perception. And they have a way of really pissing off the people on their own side.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the thing that I find really weird is that there is this desire or this belief, you know, from a lot of mainstream Democratic sort of strategists and thinkers, that is even today in 2025 about being scared of being progressive, that the way to win it is to be milquetoast, down the middle, you know, moderate, super moderate, don't scare people. But it's
Donald Trump was really that way, wasn't he?
Right. And who are they picking off? I mean, which MAGA people are they going to win over by being like, yeah, actually, you know, we shouldn't have more housing? Like, what MAGA people, what RFK Jr. supporting mouth breather is going to be like, oh, now that the Democrats think that, you know, we shouldn't have more free housing for poor people, I'm going to vote for Democrat. Like, that is the dumbest. I don't know where that thinking is coming from. I really don't. I mean, it almost so archaic. I mean, it reminds me, it's the Bill Clinton triangulation, but that was 1,000 years ago.
That is a good question for you to ask our guest, who's going to be with us in just a few minutes, because despite her one job as the chair of the Riverside County, California Democratic Party, she also, her day job is working in dealing with housing shortages for people and, you know, getting the unhoused in. We're going to talk to Joy Silver. That's going to be next.
Do you want to meet a family with a transgender kid? Here we are. Max loves to do backflips. Max loves to play his ukulele. Max loves to just be a kid and just be himself. When I found out I was pregnant, all I really wanted was a happy, healthy, whole child. And that's what I got. If you've never met a transgender child before, what I want you to know is that that child is no different than yours. They have the same hopes and dreams and deserve the same equality as your child does. We tell our kids as often as we can that we love them in as many ways as possible. There are some politicians who are trying to tear my family apart simply because my son is transgender. Trans kids don't have a political agenda. They are just kids. They just want to be left alone. My family's just like yours. We love our kids unconditionally, and we will never stop fighting for them. Stand with us. Protect our families.
Welcome back to Richie and John, and we're glad to have joining us the chairwoman of the Riverside County Democratic Party in the state of California. Riverside County is the 10th largest county in the United States, so there is definitely some importance to the role that she has in trying to help Democrats or, you know, progressives hold office, and also to win important measures like the one that is before California voters with Proposition 50. Joy Silver is back. We talked with you, gosh, it's been like a year or so ago now. I can't believe
it's been a while. Yes.
But we appreciate you being with us. And I know that as one of the organizers of Indivisible in our region here in Southern California, that you and a lot of other people have been very busy preparing for the second No Kings Day that is happening today, Saturday. So I wanted to have you join us for that and talk about why this is an important thing for as many LGBTQ people as possible to be involved with, and maybe a few other topics may come up because not much has been happening in the news lately. So
too much has been happening, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I think the one of the things that we were talking about kind of before the break, and you know, it goes to a lot of these different things. I mean, it goes to No Kings Day. It goes to activism. Is the thing I'm just always struck by, and we were talking about Zohran in New York City, and I was explaining that I have a lot of friends, you know, all of whom are Democrats. We're not talking about Republicans here, but that are very torn on Zohran, some of whom are very excited about his candidacy and really pushing hard for him, and some who are either sitting on their hands or are actively kind of hostile. And it just strikes me that it reminded me a little of when AOC came on the scene in New York City. And that there is a chunk of the Democratic Party that is so skittish about anything that smacks of even slight progressivism, that they just run away from it. And I'm just thinking, my question is, in 2025, are we really going to win hearts and minds of MAGA people by being moderate?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's a big subject. First, I want to say hello to you guys. These are my two favorite guys. And I guess the question about New York City is, from my perspective, is a bit broader than that. I know that your question is about winning the hearts and minds of Republicans, but I don't know that that's a big issue necessarily in New York City. I think what we really want to see in New York City is the Democratic Party come together to be able to get somebody elected that can go forward from there and that isn't a crook, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the bigger issue. And what I'm seeing is that the divide and the disunification in the Democratic Party is not so much about the progressive issues. Remember now, we have a lot of Jewish population who kind of sees New York City as a homeland. Okay. So to go further a bit to your point, people couch it around progressive and moderate, but I'm not really sure that's the real issue. Maybe it is from certain people's points of view. Do we need Republican votes to win in New York City? We haven't necessarily needed that. And we also know that New York City did not vote for our current leader. I'm not sure what we call him exactly, but I'll just give him the benefit of the doubt there.
Asshole would be fine.
Leading MAGA cultist, Mr. MAGA himself. I think that, so there's that question, right? We know that they're not in that space. Mondami can make a business case for why it's important to be progressive on things like healthcare and affordable housing and housing. I think that that would be a winning strategy for him to show that these items are indeed good for business. And the stabilization of the workforce, the stabilization of having housing, the stabilization of providing service. This is all really critical to business and creating the established place where business can mostly thrive. Okay, but let's go back to the larger question. The question becomes, and this is from my perspective as a Jewish woman, from what I hear, okay, is that Mamdani himself did not, it's not that he equivocated. He was very adamant about using the word jihad. And he had used the word jihad in his own definition of it, which doesn't really place well in this time frame, because when the word jihad is used, it's usually because that is the extreme Islamic state of eliminating all other religions, and particularly the Jewish population itself. So from my perspective now, that's what I see a divide is that keeps the Democrats from really unifying. He was unwilling to say, look, that's not what I meant by jihad. And he was not willing to let go of the use of the word jihad. And so even if he was at this point, I'm not sure it would work now, because that issue was still remains on the table. And so he will be suspect in that way. It's very hard for the Jewish population to accept the use of the word jihad to mean anything other than the extermination of the Jews from the earth. So that, I think, is where we're at with that particular thing. And I think all of those issues around that kind of thing have served to disunify Democrats. And I think the opposition has taken advantage of that in order to forward that. And is being a fascist worse than being a communist? I don't think that we can state that. No, that doesn't make any sense. So I don't know if this is helpful, but I think that is certainly my perspective.
And I mean, I think that it definitely, I mean, the sort of the tinderbox of, you know, what is happening, you know, in sort of Israel and Palestine is does weigh heavy on the Democratic Party and on Democrats and sort of people having different views. But I guess my question or thought about that is, like, the alternative is a completely incoherent, the Republican sort of MAGA worldview on dealing with anything is incoherent and, like, not really, I think, based in any kind of idea of peace or, I mean, I feel like we're tearing each other up on this, and Republicans are just kind of benefiting, and they're not providing an alternative that is like any better.
No, I agree with that.
And so, you know, it's in a way kind of this intractable problem, because I've seen this, you know, long before the current moment. You know, I've read the New York Review of Books for many, many years, and questions about Netanyahu's government and Palestine and sort of and Gaza. I mean, these have been issues that essentially left-wing scholars in the New York Review of Books have savaged each other about for decades. And these are people whose job is to think about this exact question, and they hate each other and they don't agree about anything. And so it's just like the fact that we're living in a moment where essentially a kind of despotic, you know, idiocracy can capitalize on that and run roughshod. It's just, I know it's a thing that exists, but it's so dispiriting to me to see it.
I agree. And I want to get to the No Kings thing, but I do want to say that in this setting, if there are two Democrats that are going to run against each other, that's a problem. And Palestine and Israel, that's a whole nother story. And that scenario has been used to foment the disunity of the Democratic Party and has made it into something larger than it needed to be ever. And so I don't see Democrats have been the one that were fomenting that division. I see it very differently than that. I see, like you said, they've taken advantage of that, that in a city like New York, where you're talking about jihadism, that's painful. And that's, and Jewish people and Israel are, although it's a Jewish homeland, it's still not worldwide Jewry. So the problems of the government of Israel are not dissimilar to our problem with having our president. And I don't think that that's understood in a way that it really needs to be understood, because you can go by and say, wow, Palestine and Israel. Well, what does that have to do with Democrats here? And we can say, well, the United States is supporting it, whatever. However, many, many, many Israeli people feel that that president that they had did not focus enough on release of hostages and used it as a political ploy to do the right side, you know, the extreme rightism in that exists in Israel that put him in power in the first place. This is not dissimilar to our problem with our current president. And there's not, doesn't seem to be an understanding of that, because it becomes the Jews. And that's,
but, you know, but the problem. And, you know, and this kind of, this is all sort of, again, the kind of disunity. But the thing that we can unify around, and, you know, which, again, you are working on, is No King's Day, because, you know, we may have some squabbles around Zohran or someone else, but I think we can all kind of rally around the fact that, you know, that the current administration, you know, is very dangerous. And it's true. Yeah. I mean, like, the, you know, all the words, right? Despotic, tyrannical, monarchical, you know, like, you know, Trump is like the sun king to these people. It's just wild. I mean, like, they're almost like meshing, you know, he's almost this sort of like theistic character to them, to many of them.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah. So the fact that a lot of us can get out there and say that, you know, we are not worshiping at that altar is really important.
Well, Joy, do you think that seeing what's happened in Los Angeles and in Chicago, and that they're trying in Portland and other places, that has helped solidify what is going to happen today all over the country in 2,100 cities?
Absolutely, I do. And that's an interesting thing that you're saying, because at this rally tonight or this evening, it is what they've done, what the opposition has done, is give us a unifying moment that it goes past all of the differences that we have. So I do agree with what you're saying, John, and also what you're saying, Richie, because in that No Kings moment, we're really talking about democracy. And what is our vision for as many people as possible to be seated at the table? I mean, I have been asked this week by other press around this issue on, for example, Prop 50. Yes, on Prop 50. This is really the directive action for our No Kings. And it's so incredible that the entire country is working with the state of California to help that happen. And that means, tactically speaking, the phone banking, the texting, the sending people to do canvassing or door knocking. I mean, it's amazing, because that shows that California and the vision of California dreaming, i.e. this strength that California has, people are depending upon California to really move this forward on a national level. And it's especially Courageous Resistance Indivisible of the Desert, and I just want everybody to know, is that we have been awarded by Palm Springs Pride. We've been awarded LGBT Activist Organization of the Year. And I can't tell you who was more shocked by it than I, because that's the city really seeing that we are not just activists, but we're advocates, and we are bringing people together, and people are having a seat at the table. Somebody asked me in an interview, and I was kind of referring to this earlier, they said to me, well, you know, people in other places in Riverside County, like Norco, are concerned that they're not going to have a voice in California if there's a redistricting takes place. And I said, is that so? I said, well, with the branches of government the way they are right now, we don't have a voice. We can talk about things, but we have no power, even though we have a voice. And by the way, the opposition doesn't want people to have a voice, don't want people to participate. They just want them to be like them. And on our side, we are for the greater number of people coming together to actually have a voice and a say and a seat at the table. So I said, so I'm not really sure what you mean by this, but I do understand you do not want us to roll out and support democracy. That was kind of my answer to that.
You come from a very interesting district, because I think a lot of people who are in our audience, many people have traveled to Palm Springs and see it as being a very progressive, LGBTQ friendly place. It has a large representation on Palm Springs City Council of LGBTQ people, but it also is a county that is split. Riverside County, which you have this responsibility for campaigning in, of a very mixed purple crowd, because you also have a congressman who serves Palm Springs and parts of Riverside County, who is a 30-plus year resident of Washington, D.C., who is very much a MAGA supporter.
Well, that's true. And not only that, but the redistricting would also move Darrell Issa out of the picture. And this would be a tremendous boon for the area, because then we would actually have some Democratic representation for change, which is unheard. It is just so painful not to have a Democratic representation. And I think this goes back to...
By the way, just so other folks know, I'm talking about Ken Calvert, who has been a real pain in our side, and one of his fellow Republicans in Congress from Southern California, Darrell Issa, who used to be in Congress before and was removed and has finagled his way back in.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So, but the cult-like behavior becomes really critical, because that cult-like behavior, in a way, there's a certain segment of the population, and I don't think it's nearly as large as people think, but that particular segment of the population needs that black or white religious experience that they've identified this person to be the head of that cult for them. And I'm not sure that without some kind of deprogramming or some kind of cultural repositioning that they're ever really going to see anything any differently. So I think, and I'm also seeing some extremely disenchanted Republicans who have been working with us and talking to us about they didn't think it meant this. And although it was clear as day to we who have read Project 2020, a lot of times what happens with people is that they think, well, I didn't know they meant me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happens.
Yeah. You have a lot of veterans who live here, and they've certainly been munched in a way that, you know, oh, you didn't mean me.
And we're going to hear from some veterans tonight, too. One's a Bronze Star recipient, and another one was in the Marines. And we're going to hear from them about how they see things right now. And I think that's kind of exciting. And what we do with No Kings is to be sure to hear from many kinds of voices and many kinds of ethnicities and cultures, so that people can see how large the unification of our values are. And this goes to what you were saying, Richie, earlier, the core issues of having a seat at the table and having your voice heard. That is essential to our value system. And that is the missing piece, because what the opposition is saying, we have a voice and a seat at the table, but you don't.
This is, I mean, like, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, but it's like all of the moves that they make are about immiserating life for many different types of people. You know, like trans folks, immigrants, you know, people of color. You kind of go down the list, and then you look on the sort of the flip side and the things that they're doing. Like, I think that pardoning the January 5th folks was really this sort of clarion call to say, you know, and you look at the people who they bring into the administration who are, you know, discredited, you know, criminals, you know, and it's really, you know, about at the end of the day about they're really about excluding as many people from the table as possible. The table for them is really cis, straight, white men and the women who support them.
Well, let me take it a step further. Is it even them? Okay, that is sort of the first set of criteria. But as long as you're a pedophile or a rapist that's rich, let's take it to where the real section of people that get the benefits of this.
But that goes to, I think the true ethos of what their thought is, you know, and it is that straight white men should not be held to account by anyone except to the extent that other straight white men care to do so. But it's like the idea that there should be, you know, accountability for, like you said, you know, sexual crimes, financial crimes. If you're a straight white guy, especially a rich one, I think they truly believe that they should have complete impunity and immunity and actually ascend to more power. And so, like you said, the idea of platforming many voices is just a way of saying, like, look, when you look at the table in the cabinet today, in the current administration, it could not be a starker difference from the people who are on the dais at a No King's Day, you know, where you have so many types of voices. They're not all, you know, the current president has talked, even in his first administration, about central casting. People in power are white, straight men who look a certain way. Or the sort of the licks, the women who are willing to, you know, sort of coddle and like cosset that worldview. And, you know, and if you look, you know, into things like, you know, there's a great book by Klaus Tavelite called Male Fantasies about the kind of the worldview in Nazi Germany in that era. It talks a lot about those dynamics. And so it's just, I love that you mentioned how important it is to hear from everyone from ex-military to, you know, immigrants, to people of color, to trans folks, you name it, because those are the exact voices that are like, are really people who are not, they don't have a seat at that table. And it is by design.
Hmm. It's so interesting. And John, I'm sure you're familiar with this, but there are so many gay men. I don't know what it is. Is it Stockholm syndrome? I mean, do they really think it's not going to be them when it's time? This is what happened in Germany, right? It was like these out-groups or these marginalized groups, like the Jewish people who were really, really rich and or had fought in World War One, thought they meant those Jews, not these Jews, right? And sure enough, 1/18 of Jewish blood, if they could trace you, you were also, you know, they put you right out on the street and shot you too. And I know this to be actually true by people that I've known in my life who experienced their father didn't leave Germany, but they left.
Yeah, I can't hear people coming at me and saying, but nobody warned me, because that's not true. I know that the two guys sitting here and you have been warning everybody for the last several years.
Yeah.
And they'll grasp at straws too. I mean, like you're talking about that sort of, and I think gay men in particular, like, you know, in the queer community, there's just a certain group. They will grasp at straws. They'll say, hey, Richard Grenell is part of the Trump administration. He's a gay man. They love gays. And it's like, have you read Project? Have you seen what they're actually doing? Like, you know, he's at best a token. But you're going to hang your hat on that versus every single other thing they've done to slowly but surely chip away at your rights, your safety, your freedom, your ability to exist, to even be like mentioned. You know, like, okay, good for them. They have Richard Grenell. They're also erasing us. Yeah. But I agree with you. I mean, like that, the fact that those people can, you know, that those gay men just unwilling, and those are also the people who tend to be the LGB without the T people, you know, are there.
And just as Elon Musk was the person who bought Donald Trump's seat for him, Peter Thiel was the person who bought J.D. Vance's seat for him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But, you know, but it is so naive of them to think that they're somehow exempt from.
Right. When the pitchforks come out, there's no distinction between who it is that, you know, gets up on the pike there. And I think we're sort of building towards that moment. And what I'm really excited about for our No Kings this evening is that people come, and I've often heard this, well, okay, we rally. What does that mean? But when you're at a rally, you're experiencing the numbers of people. In other words, we don't get to see all of us the way we get to see us at a rally. We don't. We experience it in a story. We experience it when somebody writes about it. But to be in the room with the energy of all of these groups coming together, you realize there are so many more of us when we're united.
Yeah.
And this motivates people to take an action and realize all is not lost. In fact, what they've done is they've brought us all closer together, because a lot of people won't see a trans person in their life. And yet when we had a trans speaker in June, oh my God, she stood up there and she cried. She says, I can't believe this crowd. Now we had 5,000 people. And she said, I can't believe that I'm getting this value from this group who's just loving me in this moment. I mean, she was just taken aback. And I think it's very important for these different generations of people, for the different ethnicities and cultures, to just really be in a room with each other in a place that they may never really cross necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really critical for everybody to go and be a part of the rally in their town today or tonight. If for no other reason, I remember the very first thing that I went to that kind of brought me out of my shell from, you know, my being averse to activism, and that was when I went to the NGLTF's Out in the Workplace conference back in the mid-90s, Palo Alto, California, and that was the first time I met Elizabeth Birch. And at the time, she wasn't with the HRC, she was the chief litigation counsel at Apple Computer. And I remember listening to her and to Michelangelo Signorelli at that event, and when I was flying home, all I could think about is how I went from being this person who like wanted nothing to do with activists to God help the first 10 people who get in my face after being at this conference. And I think that people will find themselves really energized by attending these No Kings rallies and find themselves doing something that they might have thought they'd never be capable of, and you know, being passionate with their family, their friends, their coworkers about what we need to do in these next election cycles.
Well, what you described there, when people come together and they see how many of us are together on taking an action, on being together, it's that same, that's a spiritual experience, because you see yourself as something part of something greater than yourself. And I can remember back in the first Gay Pride, when it was still called Gay Pride, right? They didn't even know GLBT. Those letters weren't even associated together at that point in time. But that first one, I never knew there were so many gay people. And when I saw the magnitude of my first New York Gay Pride March, and I was very young, I was like, wow. And from that moment on, the power that it gave me in knowing that I count, there are many, many others that I don't even know about. They certainly weren't telling us that on television, that there were thousands and thousands of us, right? And there it was. I got to see us. I got to see me and where I stood. And that was, there's never a better moment than that. So I'm just saying to everybody, you got to come out tonight. You be there at 4:00. We want to see you. And remember, this needs you. We need you. We need each other, because it's either all of us or it's going to be none of us.
Well, whatever community you're in across the country, Google today, if you're listening or watching us on Saturday, where your community's No Kings rally is going to be held, and go participate in it if you can.
On behalf of the Mutual Broadcasting System and the QNN, Thank you for listening to this episode of Richie and John. This concludes this series. But stay connected to MutualQNN.com for details on upcoming podcasts that will focus on and highlight the stories that have an impact on the LGBTQIA+ community. For more information, write to info@mutualbroadcastingsystem.com.